friends. How's it going? Welcome to episode 9 of the Market or Pitch podcast. We are in episode 9, and I just want to say happy Black History Month to everyone. Welcome back to our show, and I can't believe we are in episode 9 of the first season. So go ahead.
Sorry for the interruption there, Corey, but I just wanted to quickly say hi to everyone. Welcome to episode 9, and yes, happy Black History Month.
Yes. So if you've been listening to the podcast to date, you already know who I am. But if this is your first time listening, I am Corey Davis, and I make up one half of the Market or Pitch podcast. I've been in the advertising and marketing industry for close to 10 years and have broad experience across agencies and media companies alike. And I'm also joined by my co-host, the wonderful Yesenia Reynoso, who I like to call is a PR guru. And she's the first call I make if I have any questions about PR. So, Yesenia, I'll shut up unless you say a real hello to the audience.
Well, thank you, Corey. PR guru is definitely bold, to say the least. But, you know, I basically want to do the best I can. So thanks, everyone. It's a pleasure to hear from all of you. Welcome to episode 9. Quickly, for those who don't know me, I've been in the PR and communications industry for about 10 years. I'm currently the digital marketing and media relations officer for Y Communicate. And I've worked in various industry sectors, from cinema, wellness, education, business development, events, and among others. So it's great, to be here with you, my friend, and as well to all of our audience members. We want you to, take the opportunity to listen to all 8 and soon to be 9 episodes of season 1 of Market or Pitch, which is available on all major podcasting mediums, iTunes, Spotify, Pandora, Amazon, etc. And also, if you want to chime in on today's episode, feel free to do so. Leave a review or email us at marketerpitch@gmail.com. Like, comment, share, subscribe, and many more. Definitely want to hear from you.
Awesome. So to start things out, how was your week this past week? Did you do anything fun this past week? Or watch any new shows, and that's what we like talking about as well?
Well, I could safely say, Corey, that over the last week, I've been preparing for the baseball season. So finally, this past Wednesday, pitchers and catchers reported to their spring training sites. And I've been catching up on coverage and preparing for the baseball season. In terms of TV shows, I did watch the Rosamund Pike movie, I Cared About, and WandaVision, which I must say, if anyone who does not have Disney Plus, they should download it right now and watch that show, because it is enticingly funny and very, very innovative.
Yeah, I'm actually do want to watch WandaVision. I had Disney Plus. I'm a Verizon subscriber through my cell phone. And when Disney Plus was first launched, Verizon subscribers had a free year to utilize Disney Plus. Of course, I took advantage of it. And I find myself not really watching programming. I'm not a Star Wars fan, so I didn't watch The Mandalorian. I watched a couple of Disney Channel originals that remind me of my childhood, but that's really about it. So I'm actually waiting since I found out that WandaVision episodes are weekly, I'm waiting for all the season, the whole season to be finished, so that way I can download Disney Plus for 1 month and pay the $4.99 and binge it.
Yeah, I originally was going to do the same thing. I was planning on waiting till the complete first season of WandaVision wraps up and then just binge watch it straight up. But I decided to, to give it a look since people were definitely commenting about the latest episode. Not going to give away any spoilers.
Please don't.
I decided to finally, catch up on it. And there's 2 more episodes left on the season. So for those who have not gotten the chance to watch it, please do, because it's actually a very entertaining show. So if this is the kind of content that Marvel's going to put out on the streaming TV service sites, I have a good feeling Marvel fans are going to be extremely happy.
Okay, awesome. And going back to baseball, because I actually haven't been following the spring training news too closely, are just in the age of COVID, is this upcoming baseball season, the MLB going back to almost COVID is not here anymore, as it's going to be a normal season, normal spring training in Florida and Arizona with fans. Just give me a quick update on how the MLB is managing COVID within the new season.
Well, several weeks ago, MLB sent out a tentative proposal to the players' union wanting to lower the amount of games from 162 to 154, as well as implementing a universal DH and a continuation of last year's postseason structure. But the players' union obviously turned it down. So this year, it is expected that the 2021 season will in fact go a full 162 game season. No designated hitter on the National League side. And as of right now, the current playoff structure is the same as it was prior to the 2020 season, I should say. And so all of the camps, all 30 teams have reported today. Today it was position players who were supposed to report. Obviously, every club is different. In 1 week's time, spring training games will actually begin soon enough. And so as of right now, the season is tentatively scheduled to start April 1st across Major League Baseball. There will be fans in the stands for those who are asking. Yes, they are planning to do up to 25% capacity in allowing fans in both the spring training sites and across Major League Baseball stadiums. So an approximate will be roughly up to 5,000 fans. It's safe to say that MLB is trying to regain some of that lost revenue from 2020 and try to revert back to a sense of normalcy, even if it's in a 10% standpoint.
Yeah, I just find myself, I'm like itching to get back to a game. So I'm hoping that at least in the Los Angeles area, sometime before the end of the 2021 baseball season, that the Dodgers or even the Angels open up their stadium a little bit, so that way I can attend the game. I'm not a Dodgers or Angels fan. I am a proud Washington Nationals fan. I'm just hoping just to get to a baseball game. I really do miss it.
I definitely hear you, my friend. You know, as someone who lives and breathes baseball, you know, I'm so very anxious to not only see the games again, but to actually see fans in the stands and go to the stadium to see them in action. So for those, if there's anyone out there, for all you Dodger fans, this has been a very lucky year for you. You are the defending world champs, and per industry experts as well as top gambling sites, you are heavily favored once again for a potential back-to-back title, which has not been done since the 1999-2000 New York Yankees. Yep. So things are looking very well for the city of Los Angeles, for your beloved Dodgers. I'll tell you right now, Corey, National League is a gauntlet this year. You got the San Diego Padres who have improved, the Atlanta Braves, the Mets, obviously here in New York. So many teams who are incredibly good. It just goes to show the overwhelming talent, you know, that they have. So I really know it's going to be a dogfight, whereas in the American League, it's nothing but a crapshoot.
I agree. Oh, the Braves scare me. As a Nationals fan, the Braves scare me this year. The Mets, not so much. It's probably because they're a huge rival, but the Mets, not so much. The Mets, I feel like the Mets pre-All-Star game, they always do strong, but after the All-Star, the Mets fall apart, and I expect the same thing this year.
They got a new owner, so, I mean, at least Mets fans can go on and brag about Steve Cohen's billions. I mean, I'm a Yankee fan, so obviously I'm on the American League side. Just to all the Mets fans, like, I understand you guys probably got a brand new owner. Congratulations, finally someone competent other than the Wolpons. But until you win multiple championships, not just one, multiple, then you can start talking about being, kings of New York. As far as I'm concerned, this is still a Yankee town. And in regards to the Yankees this year, if we could somehow, some way, be healthy, because we haven't been that way for the last two seasons, key is health, then the Yankees are going to be just as good, if not can go toe-to-toe with the Dodgers. Obviously, we are heavily favored this year to win the pennant. This year should be a walk in the park, other than the Chicago White Sox, who I see as the biggest threat. And then you got the Toronto Blue Jays and the Tampa Bay Rays, division-wise, who I see as much more of a inner league or inner AL league threat. The Yankees should be able to, crossing fingers, easily go through the American League this year, because again, as I said, it's a crapshoot.
Yes.
So it's wide open.
So we definitely got to do a sports episode, sports themed episode. So everyone look forward to a sports themed episode, because I can talk about this all day.
And oh, yeah.
So as you guys already know, this podcast is about the advertising, marketing, and PR industry, but from a Black and Brown perspective. And we will be remiss during Black History Month to not theme this episode around issues, specifically surrounding issues impacting the Black community and the industry, as in the industry, as well as towards the end of this episode, I'm going to highlight at least one Black pioneer who has changed the advertising, marketing, and PR industry. So before we get started, I just want to add that we value your feedback. I know Yesenia just mentioned this, but I just want to add over again. Please email us at marketerpitch@gmail.com. We will respond to all notes and comments. So definitely please email us if you have any thoughts. If you want to see any themed episodes in the future, if you have any thoughts on our season 2, just please just let us know any of your comments. So with that, unless you have something else to add, Yesenia, let's get started with our special Black History Month episode with some news headlines that are impacting the Black community.
Let's do it.
So the first headline for the week comes to us from Ad Age with the headline, Etsy shares diversity numbers and says its ads and workforce include more people of color. In the article, Etsy says it's delivering on its promises to boost diversity, both in its marketing and in its workforce. So in the fourth quarter of last year, 2020, the majority of the images of people in its ad, I think almost close to 60% of the people in Etsy's ad had Black or brown skin tones. Etsy also has said that it's made progress on its employee diversity goals, to me, which is even more important than just the ads that they established at the end of 2019. So they promised to double the percentage of Black and Latinx employees by 2023. Right now, the employees of Black and Latinx backgrounds make up 12.2% of their current workforce, up from 10.5% in 2019. So yes, they still have a while. They still have 2 more years to get to 20%. But I appreciate the fact that right now they're like the first company to actually release their numbers and release their initiatives on, this is what we said we're doing, this is what we're currently doing, so we show growth. What do you think? I think this is awesome.
Well, Corey, this is a step in the right direction for Etsy. They're actually been the, you know, one of the few brands who are actually, you know, taking diversity, equity, and inclusion very seriously. Applaud them for trying. They're being somewhat transparent with the practices and the work and continuing approving those efforts. So applauds to them. Second, we're slowly seeing the progress. But again, you know, hate being the devil's advocate. We have to ask ourselves the question, is this enough? We haven't even scratched the surface in terms of this conversation. Again, the diversity, equity, and inclusion question will now become a major staple moving forward. Either these companies truly make the changes they promise, or is it simply a small screen just to get people satisfied and money pockets intact?
I agree. And that's why, to me, it's important for these companies to actually release figures. People abide by goals and adhere to standards and goals if they're forced to through PR and through news releases. So every single company, especially within the advertising PR industry, made these big gestures and initiatives last summer after the BLM protests that they're going to increase their black and BIPOC populations in their companies, and they're going to do all these initiatives. Well, 2021 is a year of action. So I want to see more companies pull an Etsy and release their figures and show me what have they done the last 6 months. Are these employees increasing, or are these employees remain the same, or unfortunately decreasing? So it's been very interesting to see this from other companies.
Well, the key is effort. So the effort and constant persistence from these industries to demand and implement change. It's how they do it. It's up to them. But what's clear is that they either truly catch up with the times or fall further behind, or better yet, wither into irrelevancy.
I agree. So the second headline from this week comes to us from PRDaily.com, who has a headline titled McDonald's Ties DE&I Efforts, which, if you're not familiar, DE&I stands for Diversity, Inclusion, Equity, and Inclusion. But McDonald's ties DE&I efforts to executive bonuses. So in the article, McDonald's announced that it aims to increase the number of historically underrepresented groups in leadership roles that are senior director levels above 35% by 2025. This is not the current all of their workforce. This is senior and director levels in the corporate environment at McDonald's to above 35% by 2025. It's also committed to ensure that women hold 45% of these leadership positions by 2025 as well. And McDonald's announced to get to this that they're holding executives accountable for these commitments by tying bonuses to DE&I initiatives. So under the new rule, CEO Chris Kempczinski, who's McDonald's CEO, stands to lose 15% of his approximately $2.25 million bonus if he fails to meet goals to increase a portion of women and Blacks, Hispanics, and Asians, and other minorities in senior leadership roles. This, to me, is Etsy. What Etsy's doing is like a kudos, a silver medal. McDonald's took that initiative and they took it even higher. I think specifically within our industry is, yes, overall, we definitely need to increase. And I'm just talking about, instead of saying people of color, I'm talking about the Black population. We definitely need to increase the Black population within the advertising, PR, and marketing industries. It's very low overall. But to me, which is not unacceptable and inexcusable, is the number of Black employees who have leadership positions. Senior directors, SVPs, VPs, CEOs. They're almost non-existent in these industries. So the fact that McDonald's saying, yes, it's important for us to have a lot of Black people who work for us, we also really need to focus on senior leadership roles, because as we both know, when you have a diverse senior leadership positions, the rest of the company stands to gain from diversity efforts. I can talk all day about this, because to me, this is so amazing. What's your thoughts on McDonald's doing this?
You know, that's one way to promote diversity, equity, and inclusion. Tie it to profits. If you're going to get people to actually do something, why not do it in a way that benefits everyone overall? But the important thing, Corey, is that organizations must emphasize the cruciality of meeting the DE&I goals. Without corporate accountability, it's very easy to list commitments that aren't tied to your mission or values. You know, doing so won't help the brand strengthen its reputation and increase the trust with your audience. That's key. Instead, organizations and brands have to take an honest look as to where the organization is regarding DE&I and create a plan that is viable, but also at the same time challenges the organization to be better. We need and must educate ourselves and become better allies to build a support system that allows talent from all walks of life, from junior to senior level, especially employees of color, to go through the pipeline and become highly successful.
I agree. So with that, that concludes our news headlines from the past week. Again, if you have any comments or any thoughts, please email us at marketerpitch@gmail.com. So any last thoughts before we move on to my ad chat, Yesenia?
Well, I just want to, you know, make a quick pointer about, you know, this being Black History Month, you know, and the importance of making diversity part of your organization's DNA. You know, whether it's Black History Month, Hispanic Heritage Month, Asian Heritage Month, whatever it is, it's so important to celebrate external and internal employees of color leaders throughout the year to create organic relationships and conversations. When equity is ingrained into the company's organization, cultural diversity, DE&I will run basically on autopilot.
Yes, definitely agree with that. So next we move on to my ad chat, where I give you my thoughts on an advertising story that I've seen from the past week. And because this episode is our Black History Month themed episode, I'm going to give you my perspective on an article I've seen from this past week affecting the Black population. So my ad chat for this week is quick, and it comes to us from Ad Age, who has an article about Aunt Jemima's name change to Pearl Milling Company. Everyone's heard about this whole big name change, so I'm sure I don't have to get into the reason why PepsiCo, who owns Aunt Jemima, is doing this. But in the article, they mentioned that the name change is gaining wide awareness throughout the American population, but that things are questionable when it comes to their actual impact on sales, according to a new poll that was taken. So the poll shows like 66% of consumers are aware of the name change to Pearl Milling Companies from Aunt Jemima, but only 23% said that the overhaul would make them more likely to buy from the brand. More consumers, or 28%, said the update would make them less likely to buy products from the brand, which makes not only the pancake mix, but they make syrup and they make other products formerly under the Aunt Jemima brand. Also, 43% said it will have no impact on their purchasing decision. On an alarming note, consumers are even divided on the need for brands with controversial names to rebrand. 51% say that brands should not rebrand based off their name, while 49% said that they should. But the demand of change is actually higher among people of color, shockingly. 63% of Black consumers said that brands with controversial names, they need a change. Right behind 61% of Hispanic consumers said that brands with controversial or racist names, they should change their name or be rebranded. Womp womp, only 42% of White consumers actually supporting brands changing their names when they have a controversial or racist past to their name. So since the Pepsi company, which owns Pearl Milling Company, announced the Aunt Jemima name change after the killing of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor in the summer of 2020, there have been countless articles, think pieces, and blowback from a certain community about political correctness run amok. And the name change was just another thing on the long list of things catering to, and I'm going to air quote, the liberal left. So the fact that 51% of overall people are against this name change and only 42% of White people are against the name change, I'm not shocked given the earlier blowback this past summer from these think pieces. I've even seen memes on Twitter with people, which is it's disgusting, with people saying that they're just going to buy generic syrup and will keep their Aunt Jemima bottle and just pour the generic syrup in their Aunt Jemima bottle as a protest against the name change, which is extremely ridiculous. So with all of this data, I really just, and I'm sure Pepsi's seeing the same thing. Pepsi did their own poll, internal poll. They've thought about this quite a bit. But I really just want to, I know I come on my ad chats complaining or saying what brands are doing wrong. I really want to give a big kudos to Pepsi for sticking with the name change because it's the right thing to do. From all the data we're seeing, there's a serious risk that it could cost them sales. But the fact that they're doing what's right, even if it loses them money, should be celebrated. I know it's the bare minimum. I know it's what they should be doing, but sometimes we need to take a step back and just celebrate people for doing the right thing. Pepsi did not have to change the name. Pepsi actually would have been okay with keeping the name the same, but the fact they're doing it because what's right to me is a great thing. Trader Joe's, I'm just gonna give you another example. Trader Joe's, who we all love, on the other hand, actually did a U-turn when right after Aunt Jemima and Pepsi announced that they're gonna change their name, Trader Joe's announced that they will change some of their products. They're called Trader Jose for their Mexican themed products or Trader Ming's for their Asian themed products. These are actual names that Trader Joe's has for their ethnic products due to the racist connotations. But once the blowback on Twitter came and all these think pieces, Trader Joe's said, we're not doing that anymore. We're going to keep the name the same because they did not want to lose sales. So Yesenia, I just want to get your thoughts. Are you surprised that one, that Pepsi kept the new name? Are you surprised that White people are against this change? Or what's just your general thoughts on this?
Well, first and foremost, there are early indications of the name change demonstrating sales are not yet increased. as of now. But perhaps consumers need to get accustomed with the name change. Personally, it took PepsiCo months to come up with a cool, innovative name that generates buzz among consumers. But they came up with Pearl Miller Company, a generic name, no pizzazz. Look, I understand they wanted to return to their roots, but they could have come up with something more brand-worthy. Overall, consumers are evenly divided on the rebranding of these of controversial brand names. People of color obviously support these changes. A name change may not do much to drive sales, but what we have witnessed through data, it accomplishes an important goal, which is a signal to all consumers most impacted by the racial stereotypes that their voices are being heard and respected. At the end of the day, it comes down to profit. Will PepsiCo make the money as impactful prior to the name change? We'll have to wait and see. This is an indication as to whether or not these brand moves will make a substantial mark. And obviously, you know, regarding the second half of your question, you know, I think eventually it always comes down to ignorance. Ignorance between, you know, one major demographic who still, due to, you know, current and past historical views, you know, they have this mindset where their thoughts aren't that are just, you know, laissez-faire regarding race. That's why, you know, it has been a very difficult conversation, you know, to begin with, because they feel uncomfortable talking about it in the first place. And so, you know, in effort to bring real substantial change, you know, you have to start making these people feel uncomfortable in order for them to get properly educated through critical thinking, for them to, you know, to understand, you know, that that this is actually happening, and then make those connections, you know, in order to become better allies and eventually, you know, make substantial changes to the system.
Yes, I agree. So I want to keep this quick. I know I went a little longer than I said it was, but these issues to me, it just gets under my skin. So I'm happy that Pepsi, like I said, even though I agree with you wholeheartedly that the name Pearl Miller Company is just blah, it's nothing. But I'm pretty sure that these saying 42% of people who are of white people who are against it, and 51% overall who are against the name change, it could have been the best name possible, and they still would have been against it. So yeah, we'll see what the future holds, but hopefully that sales aren't impacted because of this name change. So with that, let's move on to Yesenia's bulletin board, where she shares her thoughts on the news from the PR world with Black History Month in mind. So, Yesenia, you want to take it away?
Thanks, Corey. With Black History Month, I wanted to do something that helps bridge the gap in connecting with Black audiences. Several months ago, I had the opportunity to write a feature on PR News in honor of Hispanic Heritage Month about how communicators can connect with Hispanic audiences through authenticity. The article is available on PR News and on my official website, YeseniaReynoso.com. In parallel to that, I found an article on PR Week that draws similar alignment, titled, Five Ways to Help Clients Build Authentic Relationships with Black Consumers. Organizations are currently looking for transparency and understanding in this market. Brands must realize that they have to develop genuine relationships and align with experts who understand that landscape. There are many ways for companies to join the racial equity conversation. Highlights diverse employees, develop products to resonate specifically with them, and to ensure that they are getting their quote-unquote cut in Black spending power. With the Black community seeing a huge, significant increase in terms of buying power, marketers and advertisers have to continue seeing the benefit through their outreach of the Black community. So per author Kiana Montgomery, here are five ways to make those connections. One, educate leaders. Continuous training is needed to educate individuals, specifically the decision makers, whether it's internal programming, community engagement, university and high school recruiting, pro bono engagement, and public advocacy initiatives. Like with every demographic group, the Black community is very diverse and so filled with stories and contributions that must be acknowledged. Second, make sure your C-suite reflects your audience. One of the real ways to make change and connect with the Black community is to have executives who reflect their audience. establish brands as a trusted voice with leaders who have experienced life as a minority living in America. Relatability. People will trust brands if they see themselves reflected in executive roles. Someone who understands them. Third, more than a black box. It's actually the most intriguing concept. Comes down to simply to audience. If you're going to be posting something, make sure it's something useful, informative, or productive in developing a call to action. If you post something simple, like a box, it stifles the conversation. It's counterproductive. Instead, look for guidance from groups who are on the ground doing the hard work. We share their mission and land the brand's voice to their cause. Educate yourself and be an ally. Fourth, listen to Black voices. Create clear lines of communications for Black audiences to share feedback. Listen to the consumers. Potential solutions could align with their needs or avert a potential crisis or two. They will be inclined to support your brand and feel like they are a part of your success story. And finally, the fifth option, support the community. Racial equality starts with the acknowledgement of systems in place that do not offer the same training, opportunities, and support to Black Americans. Instead, invest in the communities who want to invest in you. Provide programming that aligns with the industry, streamline the pathway to working with the team, and fund system changes that can help the community as a whole. Corey, I really want to get your thoughts on this because I feel that in order for companies to get a better insight on the Black community or any demographic of color in general, you have to be genuinely invested in your efforts in knowing who they are, their history, diversity, consumption, and other important data to develop concrete messaging.
Yes, and thank you. This is like, to me, it's another topic where I can go on for 2 or 3 hours on. So I'll be brief in my thoughts. But for me, I 100% agree with this article. And I think it's a pyramid. And just bear with me, everyone, hear me out. When I say by pyramid, I think that all five things can be solved with at the top. The top is, I think it was your third point where you said that your diversity and your Black employees need to reflect the C-suite. If companies really want to make all these changes, like listening to Black voices or doing things supporting the Black community, can be all started with hiring and having Black people in the C-suite. You listen to Black voices, you know, the easiest part to listen to Black voices, hire people in your C-suite. Do you want to support the Black community? You know, the best way to support the Black community, have Black people in your C-suite. That is actually the real change, because a lot of these companies mess up because, like you said, they're not listening to Black voices because there's no Black voices in the companies. They're not supporting the Black community in impactful ways. Why? Because they don't know where to start impacting the Black community because they don't have any Black employees. All of these things can be solved by having Black employees in the C-suite. And I think coming out of this episode, that's where the importance, where I want to stress. Because the Black community really needs to be reflected in and have more inclusion and more equity when it comes to economic issues. When you actually support having a more diverse staff and giving Black people opportunity to advance, your company will succeed, your company will do better, and your company will be supported within the Black community for whatever product you're selling. So I definitely think that for me, out of all of those points, starting at the top needs to be having Black employees reflect your C-suite.
You know, very well said, Corey. I'll wrap this up with this. Again, the parallels are there. As the country continues to evolve and our multiracial and multi-ethnic DNA further amplifies, brands need to take the time to do heavy research and getting to know these groups and develop stories that resonate with them. Get down to the specifics and be able to speak in their language, voice, and tone. Create relatable, authentic, and credible messaging that connects in a universal and targeted approach. It's no more catering to one group. It's now to everyone, all groups. If you can do that, then they'll be loyal to you, brand loyalty. And finally, developing a platform where employees of color can go through the pipeline and be able to succeed industry-wide, but also to make that connection, especially on the senior and executive levels. When people see one of their own, you know, being SVP, EVP, or CEO, that means you are listening to them. You are resonating with them and you're making that connection. which is above all the most important.
Yes. So thank you, Yesenia, for your bulletin board. And thank you just for having that important conversation, because I definitely think the our listeners and the world needs to hear it.
Thank you.
So again, if you have any thoughts, please email us at marketingourpitch@gmail.com. So before we end things today, I do, like I mentioned earlier, want to give our listeners just a Black pioneer in the advertising, marketing, and PR world. And that pioneer today is Thomas J. Burrell. So in 1971, Burrell established Burrell Communications, which is his own advertising agency. And in the late 60s, early 70s, as an African-American, that was very largely unheard of, starting your own company, which I'm sure we're not shocked of, given the situation of the 70s. So that agency, Burrell Communications, was headquartered in Chicago, and it orchestrated groundbreaking work for Coke, McDonald's, and Philip Morris. By the end of the 70s, Burrell topped $10 million in annual billings, which was huge. So today, Burrell Communications is still around, employs 150 staff members, and they bill close to $200 million annually, and hasn't earned a spot as one of the top advertising agencies in the U.S. Not minority-owned, not Black-owned, just period, as a top advertising agency in the U.S. So definitely kudos to Thomas J. Burrell for being a leader and changing the industry for the better. So to end with a quote from him, and I quote, Thomas J. Burrell said, if you give people negative images, then they're going to internalize those images. Thomas J. Burrell gave this quote because that was his answer on why he made it his duty to promote positive portrayals of African Americans, beginning in an era when such representation were very unpopular and even resisted. So I dedicate this episode to Thomas J. Burrell, because without him, I'm pretty sure Yesenia and I may not be further along in our careers. So definitely thank you. And with that, that is the end of our episode. I want to thank everyone for joining us on our Black History Month themed episode. This has been an important conversation, and this may be Black History Month and our topics may be about Black issues, but this should continue on through the rest of the year. Some of the things we're talking about should continue on through the rest of the year. So I definitely want to encourage our listeners to not only to take some of these issues to heart, but also look at how they can make a difference in their community. So Yesenia, before we close out, do you want to add anything?
It's all about education, and that's what Marketing Pitch is all about. It's what's all about. We want to educate our audience about how to address important societal issues within our respective industries. But more importantly, we want to be able to give you the power to be able to bring transformative change and be allies and support one another, especially as we are as we're currently going through this environment. So I want to thank our audience for tuning in. Don't forget to like, comment, share, subscribe, or leave a review. Email us at marketerpitch@gmail.com to comment on any of our segments, all so important in its own right. The podcast is available on all major podcasting mediums. Very much looking forward to continue having this all important conversation year round, Corey.
Yes. So with that, thank you guys for sticking with us, and we'll see you for episode 10. Have a good one.
Take care, all.